Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. This is the one podcast where everything we do, we say, we express aims to support you become the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. Let's touch base. I'm curious. Are there any times, moments in relating with your queen when there's a part of you, or damn near all of you, every single neuron in your nervous system seems to be screaming, "Oh my God, there she goes again. Oh, for Christ's sake, why is she making such a mountain out of a molehill on this? Oh my God, I fucking hate it when she says that, or she does that." Things that, has your queen ever said to you, got upset with you about, man, you know, like, hey, why are you getting so upset about that little thing? She's making it a little thing and your nervous system is feeling it's a big thing. So there's this, you know, the honest answer is 10,000 guys in front of me, all hands are going up. You would not be listening into this podcast if there was some level of frustration, and I'd say sometimes downright confusion, of like, why is this an issue? Why did she just say that? For God's sake, I've told you a million times. You know, like, just don't be saying that. That hurts me. You're hurting me. You're frustrating me. And you mightn't have the words. And here's the key thing, you know, as men, we've had it so bastardized out of us, the emotional connection. Very often, we go into overwhelm. 90% of stonewalling in marriages, it's the male partner, because we have, in this profoundly sick society, we've had to radically disconnect, cut out our emotional experience and pretend that it isn't there, that it's quite the challenge for the vast majority of men, definitely was for me in the beginning, to articulate what's actually happening. And yet, let's call it frustration. You know, like, there is this all-pervasive frustration that guys are having in relating with their queens. And there's tons of moments when this mad frustration comes in really intensely. So frustration, or whatever other amount of different emotions that come up for you, it's explosive and it corrodes trust, it corrodes love, it corrodes the sweetness, it corrodes, you know, when guys are speaking with me, it's like, you know, I'd ask them on application calls for heroicisms, men's circles, or, you know, one-on-one coaching, and it's like, what would you really love? What they'd love the most, so often it'd be like, I want to bring it back to how it was in the beginning. And I'd set that with you, it's like, you know, as you're coming into this episode here, reconnect with how it felt in the beginning, you know, when there was flow of love, there was flow of affection, there was flow of fucking nice things being said, there was flow of a capacity that, you know, early days, she said that thing and she did that thing and there was a part of you going like, ah, well, that's not ideal, but you could flow, you could keep it spacious and playful and you could disregard the small little things, because why? The good feeling buzz was there, and it's fucking beautiful. It's really beautiful, that. So I would say, you know, I get it. Oh, I want to bring it, recreate it like it was in the beginning. It's like, you don't want it like it was in the beginning. You want the mature, deeper, more fulfilling experience of mature love where it's flowing, but it's flowing in a grounded way that you're unstoppable in the face of any emotional shit that comes up inside of you, or indeed inside of your queen. This is the road of self-mastery. Self-mastery is self-mastery in any realm. Self-mastery is a peak performance sports, you know, sports performer in a business arena, as a social reformer, it doesn't matter. It's the self-mastery is the capacity to self-regulate your emotional state and then get the job done. So what you're looking for always in, you know, Of course. Oh, no, Mark, I'm not looking to self-regulate. I'm looking to fix my marriage. I'm not. Yeah, but the path is always self-regulation of your emotionality inside your nervous system. No matter what emotions come up, you can self-regulate, get back to groundedness and masculine practitioner. You get the job done. And getting the job done is repairing upset with your queen, is being romantic, it's spicing up your sex life, it's being able to parent in a way that's respectful for your kids and your queen trusts you in doing that, etc., etc. To do this, you must look at your emotions, and I would say it's like the process, the definition of meditation that I quote so often when I work with guys. I didn't understand meditation at all. I thought I was shit at meditation until I heard this definition. Meditation is the process of coming to know your mind. I'm like, wow. So it's like meditation is not the process of being a Zen-like monk with no thoughts and no emotions. And I'm so Zen, I'm transcendental. You know, I can sit here with absolute stillness in my body and stillness inside. Oh, look at me, I'm enlightened. It's like I had this bastardized version of meditation, this, and I was like, wow, anytime I sit, I'm a fucking mess on the inside. I can't meditate. And yet, part of that definition allowed me to drop in and go, wow, well, meditation is the process of coming to know my mind. So if I'm sitting and my mind is going crazy and there's these emotional upsets inside me, well, I'm coming to know my mind. This is you coming, in many senses, the greatest challenge before you, whether you want to accept it or not. And again, hey, if you're still listening in, if it's your first time, you're welcome to it. If you've been listening for quite some time, you know, it's masculine, feminine energies inside of all of us. And marriage becomes infinitely easier when you can start becoming at one that you have a feminine core. And what's the feminine core in you? It's, well, the feminine, most simply, is body and emotions. Your queen will constantly knock you off path, and to the point at which divorce might even seem like a good idea, at the point that there'll be that much contempt between you. The main thing that's happening from a male perspective is it's the triggering of emotions, and we disconnected from that feminine core. It's like emotions are wrong. You know, it's like the childhood memories. And because we disconnected so much for it, we're so fucking scared and utterly resistant to going there. And hence, marriage therapy, it's like pulling our fucking teeth out, because not only is there there's a stranger there, there's the therapist, and we might even try that, but there's our queen there, and it's this, I just don't want to go there, and I don't want to talk about childhood, I don't want to talk about mom and dad. It's like, you know, we might resentfully, grudgingly go, yeah, you look at my parents didn't get on, but, you know, you're just being a bitch. Like, we want to bring it back to the simplicity of rational black and white thinking. You're saying these things, you're doing these things, you're not being a good wife, you don't want to screw me in the last 2 years, it's a disaster zone, I blame you. And we sit there, arms folded, looking at the wall. And I get it, guys. And yet, I do want to powerfully, lovingly, compassionately meet you there and get, like, man, I get that. The last thing I wanted to do was look at my past. And I just went with the black and white simplicity of, hey, you're being an asshole. You're being a bitch. You're being a horrible woman. And blaming my queen. Blaming my queen was like this. There's a great power in righteousness. Not a great power, but it's not great at all. But there's this feeling of, if I can just blame whore, why we blame, in any given moment, why we blame people, oh, you're at fault, is we're hiding from a sense of inadequacy, deep, deep down. So let's take an emotional ride in here. I've spoken to this before, but repetition is mastery. You need to keep chipping away at that external resistance, the part of your persona, your personality. Persona is literally meaning a mask. That's a really resistant part of your identity that is so invested into being right and making somebody else wrong. Let's look in underneath the hood of it. I've spoken before about attachment theory. Attachment theory, we have two human needs growing up, and we still have these human needs, attachment and authenticity. The major screw up in life is we will, it's not a screw up, in childhood, we will sacrifice our authenticity to meet our attachment. Why? Because attachment is food, it's having a bed, it's having heating in the house, it's having a roof over your head. It's like the fundamentals. Super important to survival. Authenticity is, oh, your emotion, your creativity, all your quirky uniqueness as a boy growing up. We sacrifice that to meet attachment. It makes sense, because if your authentic expression is pissing mom off, dad off, etc., etc., and if you pursue that, well, it's like it becomes life and death as a young kid. It's like, wow, if I upset them and they won't pick me up, it's like, wow, there's an incredible danger in that. You know, you're one, you're two, you're three, four, five. It's not the 40-year-old you, 50-year-old you that can go, yeah, well, that's why at some point it's like, I'll just lone wolf it. Because we're sick of having been upset and not having had our needs met. But there's a ton of stuff that happened to you when you were younger that has set down emotional reactivity in your nervous system. Hence, your queen, if your queen was there in front of you, and you could, part of this, I want to say, is like, oh, you know, guys can, it's really easy to say, well, I'm not the emotionally reactive one. Ironically, getting emotionally reactive. It's like, it's very easy, guys, to be like, I'm not the one. Like, I'm actually rational. The only one that's super irrational and super reactive is my queen. And it's like, well, yeah, that's super easy to say. It's really simple to say things. It's really simple to think things. It's really simple to think yourself into being the one that is immovable, like in you're the rational one and the problem is yours. But guys go white in the face when they go, okay, well, if your queen was here, and it's hypothetical, but it's like, man, if your queen was in the room and I turned the horn and said, hey, Tommy here is saying that he's the rational one and you're the one that is constantly upset and it's because your parents divorce and blah, blah, blah. You know, like he's actually the one that's fine and his major challenge in life is just dealing with such a broken human being. You know, are there any times, is there anything you would like to say to Tommy now to sort of let him know, yeah, you know, are there any moments when you say something, Mrs. Whoever, or, you know, you say something, do something, you forget a little thing, and then he just gets upset. Really upset. Almost like he's like a childish. Does Tommy ever come across to you like he's not a mature man? He's actually quite childish emotionally. Every fucking woman on the planet, every wife on the planet is going to say yes! That's why we don't like going to marriage therapy, and that's why marriage therapy struggles to work, because there's this... The man is there trying to put it on her and she wants to fucking scratch his eyes out. And you have a therapist in the middle trying to calm everybody down to masculine, you know, dependable practice, structured practice, which it's really difficult. So your queen isn't here, but just trust the process, man, that you're not as rational as you believe you are. And there's a fucking ton of emotional reactivity going on deep down inside of yourself. And if you're like, no, I am the rational one. I am the calm one. The only reason is that in childhood, you turn the volume of your emotions down. Because why? It was the great way. A ton of guys, that was my version. I'm not very emotional, you know, I'm the grounded one, I'm always calm. It's fucking infuriating to your queen that there's no emotions going on, or you're pretending there's no emotions going on. She's seeing it in your body within a nanosecond. So I'm building that context again and again so you really recognize there's a fucking, there are atom bombs of emotionality going on. In childhood, I spoke to attachment theory before. You know, when we go through distress, distress as a child, emotionally, your nervous system is developing its ways of orienting and understanding the world. When you experience distress, and I would say also, important thing that attachment theory doesn't really point to is if you experience massive bliss. So if you experience distress to bliss, and what's the importance of this? High emotional arousal in the moment, and you don't get any support, or you get taken down. So in distress, you don't you don't get supported. You don't get the hug, the hand on the shoulder, the cuddle, the affirmation, the explicit, here, I'm here with you. You don't get that. You end up, that's where the trauma happens. Trauma is not what happened to you, because I will mention certain things in childhood, and some of them, like looking back as the 30, 40, 50, 60-year-old you, you can go, oh, well, that's just a simple thing. Why? Because we have the rationale. We make it simple. But you've got to look, a lot of this can even be pre-memory, or you mightn't even have a distinct memory of it. But you've got to step into the inner world of you as a 2-year-old, 3, 4, 5, and realize those things that the 30, 40, 50-year-old you can look and go, well, that's mundane, that's simple, that was nothing, you know, and you can rationalize it. Yeah, of course, yeah, dad got upset there, but like, you know, whatever, he was working, he was, you have this supremely adult-like interpretation. When your belief systems were set down, you had none of that interpretation. So it was real. It was life and death. It was like, it was exceptionally intense, the experiences. So the trauma is not what happened to you. It's what happens in you when you had no support during or after what happened to you. If you get that support, if all the different things that happen in your childhood, if you get your mom, dad, people that care about you to go, hey, you know, son, I know we forgot you there at school. That's completely on us. And they apologize and they sit with you. It's like, hey, how did I make you feel? Blah, blah, blah. And then they invoke, they ask for your curiosity and you get to question them and say, or you get to express, hey, it made me feel upset, angry, lost. There's a part of me that's angry. Of course you're angry. And they validate your whole human experience. You're fine. There's no trauma. But if you don't get that support, it's really lonely being a kid when there's not that support. And even with really loving parents, unwittingly, in the busyness of life, of financial pressures, of this profoundly sick society where dad is gone and there isn't that old, you know, nucleus family, there's family and there's uncles and there's neighbors and there's a whole lot together. There's a ton of support. So dad could be away, but there's not going to be, it's not going to have a massive weighing on the family context. So in all of this, in your childhood, your nervous system is continually trying to answer 4 questions. Am I good enough? Can you handle me? Am I lovable? Can I count on you? And if there's this icky part of you going, oh, Jesus, whatever, trying to discount that, hold space for that. If there's a part of you resistant to even going here in the conversation, hold space for that. Don't make it as an absolute truth. Don't have the ickiness or a vulnerability that comes up in you take you off track. That's actually part of the emotional reactivity. There's the resistant, I don't want to go there. When I'm working with guys, and, you know, guys will actually come to me, and definitely in the one-on-one, like my main package that radically transforms marriages, there's not one guy that came in one-on-one that didn't have a massive transformation happen within himself and within his marriage. Massive, like to the point of which they can't even understand. Guys are like, Mark, I don't even know what has happened. Because a ton of guys have done therapy before and they're like, oh, well, if therapy didn't work, what's this going to do? And the thing about therapy, you know, so many guys have went to talking therapy. Not all, but a lot of guys I've worked with have went to therapy and they're quite dubious about, well, I've been in therapy for 3.5 years and, you know, I'm still struggling in marriage. Like, Mark, you're talking about having, you know, a 3-month one-on-one package and you have this radical confidence that's going to transform. I mean, Mark, that's just like 10 sessions and I know you do practices, you know, during the week, and it's like pretty intense, but like, Mark, how the hell is 3 months going to do the job? And then they're 3 or 4 weeks in and they're already experiencing massive transformation. It's like, what is it that happens? Well, my main thing is what I'm doing here. It's like, I make it accessible, and I'm the main thing is like, it's okay. I'm a regular dude. I resisted all of this shit before, and I didn't want to go there. I didn't want to look back at childhood. There's a part of me didn't want to blame mom. That's actually one of the major things that guys, there's this loyalty with mom. Because I will bring it front and center in this. It's like, yeah, you can have resentments with dad. We do have father-son wounds with our masculine lineage. But when it comes to what will aggravate you the most, what will trigger you the most with your queen, you got to look at the son-mother one, because it's your nervous system has made this link. It's like the beliefs and how the nervous system learned to relate with the feminine, your mother growing up. It takes the exact same playbook and it tries to play it out with your wife, with your queen. And the major confusion is the playbook that established some bit of normality in relating with your mother. When you use the exact same playbook with your wife, the confusion is it doesn't fucking work. It irritates your queen. She might have even liked your pleasing attributes in the beginning, but at some point she got pissed off and she wanted anger, she wanted sexual desire, she wanted infinite love, she wanted balls, she wanted heart, she wanted you to be able to call her to account, but in a way that was trustworthy. And it's like, you, none of that. Your playbook from childhood had nothing to do with relating with a powerful wife, with a powerful queen, with the mother of your kids. It's an entirely different playbook, and most guys just don't take that on board. This job here is like, if you don't lean into that process of meditation, hey, it's the process of coming to know your mind. If you don't lean into the process of coming to know your mind, well, guys, your mind and all its pathways and patterns and its ways of condition ways, its conditioned ways of interpreting your world, your mind is what creates your entire life. It's this foundational point. Your body is transmitting a message which is evoking a response from your queen. 99.99% of men are caught analyzing, poking, prodding, criticizing, complaining about the response they're evoking in their queen, and they never realize, well, it's your body that's transmitting a message that's evoking that. And you can fucking wrestle with that philosophically and go, well, it's her point as well. Her body is transmitting a thing that's evoking me, and you're just being like a little bitch if you're doing that. You don't want to be the irrational bitch. You genuinely like genuinely it's like this thing most guys will resonate. It's like, hey, do you ever get really frustrated with your queen's irrationality? Oh man, and like they'll go, yeah, oh fuck yeah, it's like it's horrible. Every guy, 1,000 men in the room, husbands in the room, hey, show of hands, guys, who here has ever got frustrated with your queen's irrationality and emotional reactivity? Every hand goes up, two hands go up, guys have like hands and feet up just to for added emphasis. We're all there, I'm there, I get it. But when you get triggered by her irrationality, the only reason you're triggered is because you're so fucking irrational yourself. Irrationality is emotional. It's if you ever get have ever gotten triggered, upset, and fucking frustrated with your queen's irrationality, it's because you. This is like shadow work. It's Carl Jung. It's like anything that irritates you about somebody else is teaching you about yourself. It's your own irrationality. You don't want to be the irrational bitch. Guys, like you don't want to be that one that you're that you don't want to be that. That's not masculine. And it is masculine practice to self-regulate what's happening inside of yourself. Don't put that practice on your queen. If you go, yeah, but if I have to do this, Mark, well, she has to do it too. It's like, okay, cool. Well, that's inspiring leadership. AKA, that's a fucking total lack of leadership. So this might be intense, it might be hard, but I do want to bring, like, I've heart and love and compassion for this profoundly sick society that bastardize your connection with your emotionality. But I have empathy for that. I have zero sympathy for attitudes of, I know who I am, you know, like it's up for her to do whatever. And if she won't fix herself, blah, blah, blah. It's like, cool, that's just not inspiring because there's zero leadership in that. Why am I so black and white with this? Because I had to get black and white with myself. I had to get real. So when you look at these base level questions that we're asking in our nervous system, maybe consciously at times, subconsciously, Am I good enough? Can you handle me? Am I lovable? Can I count on you? The answers we get from the data, from the experiences that we have and how we perceive them, we form working models of ourselves and others and how to navigate, like that playbook that I said. So I'm inviting you into some self-inquiry here. And it's to a point, you don't have to go there. You don't like have to go to memories. And I would say, hey guys, if memories come up and hold space, be loving for yourself, allow memories come up, and if there's some upset that comes up, hold space for it. And if there's none, a lot of the times guys be like, oh, I can't remember actually my past. And main point of not being able to remember your past is there's quite a bit of trauma there. You shut off the emotions. We form emotions from emotional arousal, from like if there's emotional intensity. I don't go with negative and positive emotion, but if there's emotional intensity, we form memories into that. Something really bad happens to us, quote unquote bad. We will remember that because there's a lot of emotional intensity. We do not form memories. That's why modern school, it's you have to repeat 20 billion times to remember shit because you're not emotionally engaged with the topic a lot of the time. Whereas we homeschooler girls, they're emotionally engaged in whatever topic. They read one t incredibly complex book and they're only 10 and they're only 14 and they've memorized a whole lot because they're emotionally engaged. They've got the high emotion, hence the memories are set down. So if you are one of many guys that goes, God, I don't even have a big memory about like a lot of this stuff, Mark. Maybe it didn't happen. You mightn't have a lot of memories on this stuff because one of the main male ways of dealing with deeply upsetting times in our past is we will, in the formative years, turn down the volume of our emotionality. We'll dissociate, we'll numb. And when you numb, you can numb through fights of your parents. You can numb through a lot of stuff that you're seeing that's like really challenging, was really challenging super early on in life. So you can sort of start, it can get hazy in the background. The main reason you don't have memories is of the challenging stuff is you numbed, you turned the emotion, your emotional system down. So you could witness or hear whatever, but you switched off the emotions to cope with it. But when you switch off the emotions, there's not a lot of memories. So that's okay. That doesn't mean that you're wrong. It doesn't mean you're broken. That's a part of how you coped. So from those questions, my inquiry to you, or I pose the questions and you can listen to this again and again. You can even slow down and jot these down and journal them. So I bring these into trainings with guys. As a boy, where did I perceive my mother judge my dad unfairly as not being good enough as a husband, romantic partner, father, man, leader? And this is not, again, none of this is to blame mom, none of it. It's not to say she's bad. There's this sense of loyalty that guys have that I just don't want to go back there and mom and it's nothing to do, but it's to get like black box style thinking. It's like, why did the plane go down? Well, if the plane of your marriage is crashing repeatedly, and clearly it is in some way, shape, or form, you're listening to this podcast, you need to get that black box style thinking about your past and go, well, if my nervous system is interpreting and crashing and getting upset and creating disconnection with my queen, you really need to look at, well, where was all that set up? It's not to blame your mom, it's to take a look at where, ultimately, it's, you see in the question, where did I perceive? It's in the perception too. Sometimes it's not black and white. Actually, very often it's not black and white, but again, you're the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 year old you. It's like the formative years. You don't have a lot of context. You're making this shit up very often, again, by yourself. You add meaning as a 2, 3, 4, 5 year old. I mean, that's where beliefs come from. So, where did I perceive my mother judge my dad unfairly as not being good enough as a husband, romantic partner, father, man, or a leader? I go with, we end up with loaded resentments, deep emotional reactivity when we perceive that ourselves or somebody beside us, somebody we care about, was treated unfairly. Again, it's we take deep hurt on as boys, and it's super confusing when we perceive our mom treating your dad like he's not good enough. And yet in latter years we can go, well, he was a piece of crap and he was ignorant and blah blah blah. We can end up turning against our dad, which is a really deeply troubling thing as a man, and will create tons of issues in marriage. But where did I perceive my mother judge dad unfairly as being as not being good enough? And maybe it's not, maybe it was fairly, but merely it was deeply upsetting to you that she was judging him as not being good enough. Again, if memories come up, cool. Just know that these are the types of things that your nervous system was chewing on. Another question, where did I perceive my mother struggle or fail at handling my dad's authentic masculine, feminine expression? His masculine expression, maybe it was his sexual, I know. Maybe you're obviously not in the bedroom, but his sexual expression is like, oh, sort of the classic things. It's like any reference to nudity or sex scene on TV, and maybe you should not explicitly, judging his masculine sexuality, but it's everybody that's in the room, and things go frosty cold. It's like there's nude woman on scene, blah blah blah. And it's like the pursed lips on your mother, and it's like it gets frosty, or there's a comment, or she makes comments about porn, etc., etc. It's a struggling for, was there ever a struggle that your mother could hold for his expression as a man, or his emotionality? Your dad would get upset, but she would just fly off the handle. Oh, you're upset again, and you're like, God, he's having a human experience, but she's there criticizing him. Oh, I can't believe you're getting sad. I mean, come on, man up. And there's tons of moments that this happened. Again, whether you have a list or a filing cabinet of memories comes out super conscious to mind or not, this stuff was being chewed on in your nervous system. Where did I perceive my mother unfairly showing signs that my dad was not lovable? What moments, like, were there moments that he showed affection? He was trying to be nice and she just didn't receive him. She shut him off. She criticized him. Again, you can look back rational minded. Oh, but mom was having a hard time and there was all this stuff. And I know that dad was being an asshole here, there, and everywhere anyway. So there was a whole context. You have the adult context. You did not have that context when you were young, when you were forming your formative beliefs. And we will take that as a massively emotionally intense experience when you see your dad trying to do something nice and then your mother shuts him down. And we learn, it's not conscious mind, but subconscious minds learns, fuck that, dad is not lovable. And we will make these things, and years later, it's like if dad wasn't lovable to mom and I experience all of this hurt, our nervous system gets super reactive at times when our queens turn their back on us. So keep it live. Keep humble that there is a lot of this riding in your nervous system. Again, if you're listening into this podcast, it's guaranteed that it's there. Last question about your mom with your dad is, where did I perceive my dad just couldn't count on my mother to be there in support of him? Was there any times when, criticizing your dad when he wasn't around? It's like, God, he can't count on her. And again, this isn't conscious mind. This is attachment theory. They've done, what, 150 years of study and research on this. It's the stuff we're mulling over on subconsciously. It's not that as a kid we're like, oh, God, I'm just interpreting and analyzing here. Can dad count on mom? And maybe you had introspective awareness like that, but most guys know. But it's happening anyway. We're making these conclusions. They're like, God, he can't count on her. She's criticizing. God, he can't count on her there. Like, she doesn't have his back. God, he can't count on her because if he's late in from work, she fucking flies off the handle. I mean, he's working hard, for God's sake. I see his pressure. I see his efforts. Why doesn't she see it? He can't count on her. Again, you make these You have these experiences and you're looking on and you love your dad. Remember, the context is your dad is the center of your masculine universe. He's like, you're projecting the hero in your life. He's meant to be that hero. So when you experience your mother relating with him in anything that is not he's a hero, you had a deep emotional experience in those times. Now, the other side of it is, okay, so you're, by osmosis, your nervous system growing up is listening and feeling and creating all of these deep emotional experiences, memories, and pathways that will spew out, will vomit out years later. You don't know it, but it will in your marriage. The other part of the conditioning to your nervous system, it's, yes, you vicariously look on at mom, dad, and you make a chunk of your relationship playbook years later with your queen coming from that. But there's also how you experience your mother. That's your first sacred human experience of, oh, boy, you know, you have masculine and feminine, but like masculine relating with feminine, male relating with female. It's, she's the divine female. She's the feminine center of your universe. So what you learn about your experience relating with your mom is making that playbook as well. And it's similar questions. You know, what part of my authentic expression did I perceive as just not being good enough for my mother's approval? Part of the approval thing is, I want to speak this, some of this stuff you mightn't even have memory of, because maybe your mother loved you tons, and because your dad was away, she projected a lot of golden child shit onto you, and you were the star child. That can really fuck up your relationship later on, because you end up, you're like, some guys will say, Mark, my relationship with my mom was perfect. She loved me. She actually was really sweet, really affectionate with me. She, you know, it's just good times, Mark. And I'm like, yeah, and that's really confusing. Because, again, the memories in your nervous system are, it was all good, Mark, it was all good. But you get the emotional, you got so many emotional highs from pleasing your mom. And from this, oh, she was amazing around me, she loved me, she was always there, blah, 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 blah. I was the center of the universe. And then the trauma for you is in marriage when, wow, all of these behaviors you showed to evoke this pleasing smiles and love and affection from your mother. Tons of times you've learned to be a good boy with mom. Oh, you know, I learned the rules. I did what dad didn't do. I'll be a good boy. If dad is such a bad boy, I'll be the good boy. I will make up for his failings. I tried that myself. And pretty much 90% of guys in modern society have a nice guy persona, which in childhood, we pleased our mom. We learned to please her a lot. So you might have, before I go into the questions of you as a boy with your mom, you might have an answer to them. It's like, oh, I don't actually perceive a lot of shit went down with me. I actually had a great relationship with mom. But the trauma in that was you, in all of the circumstances, there were part or lots of parts of your authentic human expression that you learned to disregard. So you had this pleasing relationship with your queen, but the hidden deep down stuff that you can forget about yourself is all that authenticity. You're still trying to bring that out with your queen. And you might have even forgotten that you disregarded all of that stuff of yours with your mother. So you're like, Mark, and guys get confused with that. Mark, my relationship with my mom was lovely. And then I'm listening to him and he's like deeply reactive with his queen when she says anything about him being, anything about his sexuality, his sexual performance. And like, okay, well, if you look back, let's just go into sexual performance. It's a really common one. His sexuality, his sex drive, his desire to fuck, etc., etc. It's such a classic one because guys get deeply triggered. It's like, God, you know, they struggle to speak about this with their queens. And then their queens lack the safety, and the queens don't hold that open-hearted, loving, I'm going to love you unconditionally, and they get really triggered by that. You can be such a good boy to your mom, but a lot of times, like, your sexual core, your visceral sexual fucking drive. Hey, was that safe? Could your mom speak, like, could you speak with that with your mom? 12, 13, 14 years of age, attraction to other girls, other women, you know, you're, and is this appropriate? Of course it's fucking appropriate. We have been so bastardized out of sexual, the sexual conversation that, you know, you would, I'd imagine a lot of you would be deeply triggered to hear how explicitly myself and Matilda speak about sex with our girls and have done for a number of years. It's not like the birds and bee conversation when they're 18 and it's like, this is awkward, let's do this as a once-off conversation. There's the birds and the bees, you know, like cock, vagina, this is how it works, you know, make him wear protection, girls, or I'll kill him. Good luck out there. It's like, guys, it's explicit to levels that a lot of people, and we've heard people, I'm not making an assumption here, we've heard certain people that we've shared it with, they're like, oh my God, wow. They were grounded, were confident, and the girls have radical confidence in their sexual being. Anya's 14, Elaine is 10. Fuck yeah, we bring it at front and center. But this hasn't happened out there. So let's go to those questions. As a boy, what part of my authentic expression did I perceive as just not being good enough for my mother's approval? You mightn't have a memory of it, but there was stuff that you were packing away, guaranteed. If you get upset with your queen when she challenges certain parts of you, makes commentary, you perceive criticism, she feels it's feedback to help you just be a better man. There's stuff that you packed away. Again, attachment, authenticity are two human needs. We eradicate authenticity and prioritize attachment always as children. What parts of my authentic masculine and feminine expression did I perceive my mother struggle to or didn't hold space for in me? You know, masculine, feminine expression. Masculine expression, one major thing that our mothers, and it's not their fault, you know, it's like, because very often our dads were absent, dads were predominantly working, most of parenting happened through our mothers, and we got a more of a feminine slant on it. So again, it's taking the load off, this isn't blaming mom, but it's black box thinking, it's being objective. Very, very, very often, our mothers had a deeply unsafe experience of anger through your dad, through their husband, and hey, through their lineage, maybe with their dad, etc., etc. So I would call that anger aggression. Aggression is attacking a person. Anger is saying no. And when you say no, you're saying yes to some desire, some need, some wish, want, some unique part of your being, aka your authentic self. So nearly every single guy that I speak with, when I go, hey, how was your mother in receiving your anger? You know, was she cool? Did she speak often? Did she hold space when you got angry? Did she honor that and say things like, hey, son, I love that you're expressing anger now. This is really a really important emotion in life. That's you being able to set a boundary. So, hey, whenever you bring anger, I'm going to hold space for that. And I'm going to get curious and ask you, hey, you're angry. It seems like you're angry, son. You know, what is it that's wanting to come true? What need is not being met? What is it that I'm saying and doing as a mother that unwittingly is encroaching on your boundaries? I'm curious. I want to get to know you. And what's that know you? I want to get to know the authentic self you are that is different to me. Not one man has ever. They actually start chuckling. Some of them actually cry. They tear up and go, Mark, far from, my God, I could never get angry. It was like, don't get angry with me. You know, don't get angry with me, Mark. I've heard that. It's like, don't get angry with mom. So anger is a deeply masculine trait. We're meant to be protectors, right? What's the emotion that protects? The emotion that drives the Spartan shield is anger. But if we're constantly, when we're coming up, when we're growing up, being told not to get angry, not to get upset. And yes, there's tantrums and there's like young, super young ways of going at it. But we're trying to figure out, when we're 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like this intense emotion comes through me. How am I meant to self-regulate? How do I express it? Nobody teaches us. We don't have dad, and dad doesn't do it, and dad waits. He builds up frustration, then he gets aggressive, or he stonewalls and he shuts down, and everybody in the house is walking on eggshells, on thin ice. Everybody knows he's pissed off, but he never embodied how to, in the first wave of anger, go to your mother, hey, Patricia, hey, Megan, hey, whatever. It's like, hey, a part of me is feeling angry now, so I'm going to say no to the continuation of what you're saying and what you're doing. I need to figure some stuff out here. Like, I really need to. Can we talk about this? First wave. You didn't have that from your dad, and as a result of your dad not embodying that, your mother becomes really provoked and angry, pissed off herself at your anger. So you learn to turn that emotion down. If you've learned to turn your emotion down of anger, you were not safe growing up to bring your authentic self into full expression. This is absolutely at the epicenter of your issues years later in marriage. If you are one of many guys, 1,000 guys in a room, and you know that ideal version of how your mother related with your anger, that's what we have started doing with our girls. And guys, it's phenomenal what we're learning about our girls. We're learning how different they are, how unique they are, what their values are, what their needs are that are not mine or not Matilda's. But it's only in the last couple of years, and it's intense to get going. When I started learning this about marriage and unfucking my marriage, I then had to start looking at my parenting and going, oh, sweet Jesus, Mark, you've seen that, like what happened in childhood and how unwittingly mom and dad been brilliant fucking parents, and like they did so much, but hey, I got really royally fucked up because they didn't have awareness. It took me years and my marriage was in the absolute shitter. The absolute fucking shitter as a result. I had to take a look back. And I do invite you into this. If you don't have the courage as a man to unpack your past and unpack what happens in your nervous system as a result of that, you're going to get really nasty with your kids as well when they express anger, if you couldn't express anger growing up. So it works in parenting and in marriage. There's a lot of unpacking. If you don't have the courage to unpack, you're going to repeat the same patterns in your parenting as were put on you, or you'll try to do the polar opposite and you get so pissed off that you'll end up being aggressive anyway, like mom, like dad. Tons. This is your whole existence, guys. All what I want most here is that you start getting the point that the more you learn and open up to, oh, wow, my nervous system works this way. And that you, in all of this, you get to have a conscious choice as to what message your body will transmit. And thus you can have an incredibly non-stop, infinitely expanding power of positive influence over the response that evokes in your queen. That's the carrot and the stick here. But you won't have that power if you don't do this work. Other parts, where did I learn I was not lovable in the eyes of my mother? And the other one, growing up, what broke my trust and feeling I could count on my mother? The answers to these, whether they come through you now as you're listening to the podcast, whether you journal about them, whether you do any full-on introspective stuff in it, just know you did have explosively high emotional experiences that locked in beliefs, formed beliefs, over time in your nervous system. And it's from that your nervous system is going around today like there's gunpowder waiting to explode. And that is why your queen can't trust you. If you hide behind blaming whore, she's going to blame you. And remember that masculine, feminine, the masculine is non-surrender, the feminine is surrender. So the sweetest aspects of your queen, if you and listening in, like with most guys, if she's turned down the volume on affection, on sexual turn on, you know, sexual energy around you, desire, compassion, her open-hearted understanding, her appreciation of you, gratitude of you, seeing you and recognizing, acknowledging you, all the good stuff, all the good stuff. Like the when you love a woman, when she's in free flow of that, man, you feel like a king. It's like you've arrived. And of course you want that, you desire that, and you want to bring that back. But the masculine is non-surrender. Masculine practice is non-surrender. Feminine practice is surrender. Feminine can't surrender in space with an untrustworthy man, an unpredictable man. Feminine is untamable, unboxable, unpredictable. Feminine with a queen. When they're in their fullness, they're allowed that aspect of wildness to come through them. It's the wildness. This is ancestral teachings. It's like it's been so bastardized that we have tried to make women not women and men not men. They're like eradicate divine feminine, eradicate divine masculine. But she can only surrender. That point, the sweetest point for you, feel into this. The masculine in you is not yearning your queen to love you. There may be a part of that. Of course there's a part you want that. The boy in you is yearning the love, just the sweet stuff, the good stuff, the juice, the affection. That's the boy in you. And that is A-okay. Again, it's coming from childhood, if you're still yearning that. But the man in you is yearning above love. It's yearning for your queen to surrender in your presence because she trusts you. And if you really feel into that, you know, it's that surrender that she can collapse into whatever she's experiencing because she knows there's a fucking king on the job. She's in the presence of a man that has his inner world under wraps, but like in a good way. It's like there's a strong spine, soft front. Soft front, you can do emotions, but you have a strong spine. You're the mountain in the storm. She can surrender into that. The masculine is non-surrender. I will prevail. You know, it's that Japanese saying I love. Fall 7, rise 8. I won't fucking stop. You will practice non-surrender. You will stop at nothing to turn around your marriage. You will stop at nothing to train your nervous system in the self-mastery of self-regulating your emotional states to be able to be predictable in front of your queen. So predictable in your practice, in your conscious practice, your conscious expression, bringing your expression back online in ways that is consistently safe to her, she can surrender even more. And now she's trusting you. Now she's trusting you to be predictably safe. She can express more. When she can express more, she can give you more feedback. The more, and when you're trustworthy, you will receive the feedback. And she knows, wow, I can relax with this man. He doesn't perceive it as criticism. He doesn't perceive it as being hurt. And if he does perceive a hurt, a rejection, and anything of those emotions, he will digest it because he knows. He now knows, because he's coming to know his mind, that when I experience a hurt in my present day with my queen, that hurt is mine. That's a hurt that's coming from the conditioning of my past, from learning I wasn't good enough, that the world making beliefs, that the world, my wife just can't handle me, people can't handle me, I'm too much or I'm too little. Can you handle me? That's, oh, I'm too much. My authentic expression is too much. Am I lovable? You know, you learned that you weren't lovable and you learned that you couldn't count on others. So all of this stuff is triggered. When you have the courage and the expansiveness of mind, and this is all masculine practice, to become the awareness that goes, oh, so when my queen says something, does something, and that triggers me, it's a trigger. It triggers a pathway in me. And an explosion goes off in me emotionally. It's like, and when I catch that, this is Viktor Frankl. It's like beautifully articulated masculine practice. It's like between stimuli and response, there is a choice. So stimuli, your queen says something, does something. And the response, the immediate nanosecond response is the default pathways. It's what was set down from your ground zero belief system growing up. That is not absolute truth. Viktor Frankl, he was the guy, I'll quote him quite a bit because he's a fucking spiritual badass. Like, stimuli response. When there's no gap between stimuli and response, you're just on repeat. You're repeating the pathways, the default patterns of your past, and you will not escape. Your freedom comes from noticing that the stimuli, wife said something, did something, didn't say something, didn't do something, of course, both can trigger you. So that's the stimuli, external world. And before the response comes, and of course, it's not before, it's like the response comes, it's going to come within a nanosecond anyway. So you'll feel the triggered emotion, you'll feel the hurt, you'll feel the rejection, you'll feel the pain, you'll feel the loss, you'll feel the upset, you'll feel the sadness, you'll feel the frustration, you feel whatever. So stimuli triggers the immediate response. But your practice as a masculine practice, to become a trustworthy man, you, in this episode, and you through continual reflection and radical inner world's honesty in yourself, you recognize, wow, well, if all of my ways of interpreting and perceiving life were set down in childhood, and they were, this means that in all the stimuli in my life, going through Viktor Frankl's ways of describing it, all the stimuli of your marriage, all the stimuli of what your queen says, does, whatever, that triggers you, that is nothing to do with my queen, or very, very, very little. It's like Dalai Lama teaching. Granted, external circumstances do to some point have an impact and a relevance to your happiness and well-being. Ultimately, happiness and suffering depends on your mind and how it perceives. So it's like, yeah, to a point, if she's being an absolute ass, of course, to a point, there is a suffering there. But it's like, let's call that, you know, 1% of it. But 99% of it is what your mind, it's like Dalai Lama. Happiness and suffering depends on your mind and how it perceives. And how it perceives has nothing to do with your queen and has everything to do with the belief systems that sat down in childhood. This brings an infinite heart of compassion back online for you. You're not crazy. You're not an asshole. You're not nasty. You know, there can be judgments from your queen. It's like you've merely went through an environment growing up that created belief systems because your hurting heart as a young boy, you had to figure shit out and create coping strategies. And those coping strategies became the beliefs. And a lot of the time it was turn the emotions down, off, or maybe you lose your shit emotionally and you're hyper-feminine. And I'd say sort of hyper-feminine, it's not conducive. If you're super, super, super emotionally reactive and your queen is super emotional, one of you has to take the masculine pole to bring flow coming back in a relationship. 90% of the time it needs to be the male. So in taking on board the all pervasive fact that your childhood had a ton to do with how you perceive your queen, the return home to being the ultimate trustworthy male. And I'm talking about being the ultimate trustworthy male. You know, I don't like therapy, the therapy approach. I really don't. For me personally. Can it work? Yes. But therapy deals with dysfunction to function. And function is defined by the societal norms. And a functioning marriage in this profoundly sick society is a very low bar to set for you. So can it work? It can in times. Guys tend to fucking resist it like the plague because, hey, going through all of this inner world stuff when you've been conditioned to fucking fear it and you experience so much social humiliation and alienation and social annihilation growing up when you did share your emotions, when you did share your tears, when you did share your upset, you were fucking annihilated, not just by mom, by fucking the world. It's the last thing your nervous system wants to do. So therapy really struggles to do that. But it only brings you to function. This depth of work brings you to being the ultimate trustworthy man. That's not function. That's not functioning. This is like so fucking far beyond being a functioning man. To being a functioning man, it's like, oh, we don't argue anymore and we fuck every now and then. And it's like, it's good. It's much better than it was. We're functioning. Cool. Let's take the divorce papers off the table. Like, hey, it's better than what it was, you know? It's like, okay. No, guys, this is the level of work. It's sort of like, I don't know, let's go with a sporting metaphor. Dudes, we tend to get the sporting stuff or the business stuff. Sporting metaphor is like, this is like being, you know, you're unfit, dysfunctional. You go to the gym and you start jogging, you lose a couple of pounds and, you know, you are fitter. So you're now functioning. Cool. You leave it there. I'm talking about this, the heroic husband approach. This approach is not stopping at, I've lost a couple of pounds, I'm feeling a bit fitter, you know, a little bit tighter in the muscles, and oh God, look at those biceps. Cool, it's meaningful. You went from dysfunctional to functional. No, this is, you go to the point where you're an Olympic fucking champion. My desire here is that to uncap the levels of expansiveness and power and confidence that you can embody as a man. Not to save your marriage, because you were born with limitless self-love, limitless capacity to be or have whatever you desire, limitless capacity to stand up for something that's important for you. My marriage transformation, yes, in the beginning it was, hey, I want my wife to stay around me. Fuck yeah, definitely. And what I realized in it all was I wasn't saving my marriage. I wasn't actually doing it for my queen. I was doing it for me. I was doing it for my sense of self. I was doing it for when I look in the mirror, do I love that motherfucker that's looking back at me? Am I proud of him? When I look at him, am I looking at a man that's living at the edge? You know, is he expansive? Is he happy? Is he radically alive in life? Not just marriage. You know, getting back to functional, hey, well, it can be definitely really challenging, depending how long you've left the dysfunction go unchanged. But by and large, dysfunctional to functional can be the easy part. But it becomes easier when you just go, hey, I'm not doing this to save my marriage. I'm not doing this actually to get my wife to love me. That's going to be an easy secondary effect. I'm doing this to come radically alive again. And coming radically alive to that level of freedom. Masculine, the limitless feeling of embodied freedom inside of ourselves, that is what the masculine soul is oriented to. That's why we find feminine so irritating. There's childhood conditioning, but there's also masculine ways of relating to chaos. It's like, oh my God. And you just want to bring the conversation back to rational thinking. It's like, you want to bring it back to distill calm, to nothingness. It's why part of it is like, God, you know, it's like, you know, in arguments when she goes crazy and in the craziness of life and that, like, just to pack my bags, get in a motorbike and head for the border. You know, like if I could do that for 3 months every year, I'd be the perfect husband. Because you're yearning this perfection of stillness, of a total annihilation and absence of chaos. That's masculine. But how you access that incredible feeling of unfuckwithable inner freedom is by mastering your mind. That's where the greatest performers in sports, they master their mind. You listen to Kobe Bryant, you listen to Michael Jordan, you listen to top sports people in all genres, guys that are fighters, they will talk about accessing an inner stillness. And that is masculine freedom. Chaos is happening on the outside. The clock is going down. There's 2 seconds left and you're 2 points behind and you've one chance like to win the whatever the fuck in basketball. You're feeling under the pressure. Your opponent has won the last 2 rounds. You've 1 round left. You've got to dig deep as the fighter. It's masculine freedom. The greatest male performers access this freedom inside of themselves, and from that freedom inside of themselves, when they know it's never the external stimuli that determines who I show up and what results come. I will find underneath my fears, underneath my shutdown, underneath the beliefs of I can't, I'm not enough, underneath all of that, I will find this infinite treasure of unstoppability, of awareness, of this is who I fucking am. That is masculine practice. When you find that in the midst of the chaos of all of these conditions, masculine practice is ultimately discovering and reclaiming, and I would say aligning your entire life around it, which is you're not your thoughts, you're not your emotions, you never were. Thoughts and emotions come and go and change with the seasons of life. If you believe you are your thoughts and emotions, which are 99% of men do, you're fucked, because when your queen negates who you think you are, negates a thought, you're going to get really upset. When you're like, hey, my thoughts and emotions, they're like puffs of smoke in the wind, they're continually evolving and changing anyway, so I'm never going to take a thought or emotion that comes up in my mind as being, you know, who I am. Really, it's just the result of karma. It's the result of causes and conditions of who I am, who I was, the experiences I went through. So if they're not supporting me create a beautiful result in my external life, marriage, you know, if my thoughts and emotions and the conditioning of my mind aren't supportive for me creating a beautiful parenting relationship, money in my life, career, etc., well, I'll just remain flexible and I won't take my thoughts and emotions so seriously. I won't get black and white fighting tooth and nail to protect who I am. I'll realize who I am can shift to whatever I wanted to be, because you're coming from awareness deep, deep, deep down inside of yourself. That perspective is going to have you the most trustworthy man your queen has ever been in space with. Your marriage will not just be functioning. You will be playing the infinite game of life. Your inner world will be able to expand to a level of confidence, a level of strength, of power, of grace, of possibility. And from there, you know, not only will your marriage be back on, but you will see an unfoldment that, because your process is that, over the weeks, months, and years ahead, you will find that you will inspire your queen to bring her fullness, her most confident, happy self online, and your kids. And it doesn't matter in this game, guys. I thought I would royally fucked up my marriage. I thought I had deeply, deeply traumatized, definitely, our firstborn. But I'm a few years into this game and it's glorious. I wouldn't play any other game. There's no leadership position on the planet. I love my leadership in this, in the movement. It's not comparable. I fucking love leading this world movement, and it's an honor and privilege to see regular dudes like myself, that process. I've got blue belt leaders. One of the guys said to me the other day, he's like, he was tearing up. He's like, Mark, it's just so inspiring to see men come alive, because he knows his process of coming alive, what that meant for him in his life and the radical expansion of confidence. And it's like, regular dudes, that's what's happening in Heroic Husbands men's circles. But to see it happen, like to lead your family and be that safest, most trustworthy human being, the most healing presence in their entire human existence is me. I've worked my nervous system. All of these insights come from being the worst fucking most wounding presence in their human experience to being the most healing. I'm a regular dude. It's available to you. If you want and deeply desire the infinite game of embodied freedom to be your day-to-day, moment-to-moment experience, and from there to be the husband she brags about, to be the husband and the dad that your family can lean into, can surrender, and know that you're going to be an infinite source of expanding inspiration for them in life. And yeah, if you want to play that game, jump into the podcast link now. Click to join Heroic Husbands Men's Circles. There's also exciting stuff. I haven't formulated, but it's happening really quickly in the background. There is the base membership coming up as well. I'm super excited about that. Some guys have a hesitation about the men's circles for different reasons. Some of the reasons can be, hey, just the time commitment, time zones and work, and it can get in the way, and that's very understandable. We're all family men, a ton of stuff on our schedule. There is the baseline membership coming up. I'm excited about that. It's
going to be less in money. It'll be on your time, on your terms. You're going to be able to access the King's Coaching Call, direct access to me, the King's Coaching Library, which is the inner circle library of guys coaching, vicariously learning off other guys, their story in their relationships, etc., etc. It's super high leverage, and all the teachings in behind, all the meditations. You're going to have access to the full resources. Plus, there's going to be other access to the full community of guys around the world there within a nanosecond. You'll always have a guy ready to support you, to give you advice, to point you in the right direction. You're having a trouble in that. There's guys there to have experiential know-how at what it means to be a regular dude and what you need to do to turn your marriage around moment to moment. So I'm super excited about that. Your best way right now, take action, jump in. Click the application call. It's free. It will be the single greatest decision you've made this year, and I would say arguably your entire adult life. Fuck yes. In perfect alignment with the mantra of this movement. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day.